Hey there, this is Brian Trunzo, Metaverse Lead at Polygon Studios, and you're listening to Port Zero, your port of entry to the Metaverse. Today we have a very special episode for you, co-founders of Nifty Island, an incredible virtual world and game being built upon and integrated with Polygon. So we have the co-founders here, and I'll let them introduce themselves to get started.
Yeah, hey, I'm Zach, CTO and co-founder here at Nifty Island. Pleasure to be here, Brian, and excited to tell people about the game and how we plan to integrate with Polygon and how, you know, blockchain in general fits in with gaming from our view.
I'm Charles, CEO, co-founder of Nifty Island. We're playing games, working on a game. We're excited about Polygon being a home for user-generated content in the metaverse. Psyched to dig into it.
Fantastic. And oftentimes, the way that I like to get started on these conversations is, you know, understanding how you guys broke into the space, you know, how you crypto-pilled yourself, and then how you started to develop your decentralized application and your vision. So, gentlemen, please, you know, how did this all start? What's your origin story?
Yeah, so, I mean, if we're talking origin story, it might help to start from our beginning here, which is Charles and I have been, you know, acquaintances and then friends onward from middle school. And, you know, throughout the years, we've kind of just been throwing around business ideas and seeing if one stuck. And, it's been many unsuccessful thoughts. And this is the first one we really, truly pursued, as it seemed like, you know, this is a real opportunity for, you know, this tech enabled something that we hadn't really seen. And it seemed like we had an idea for a product that had to exist in some capacity. So this is the first project we've embarked together on. And for me personally, I got into crypto in like 2017 during that bull run, mostly interested from like an investing perspective. And from there, like my interest in the tech has grown and grown. Personally, I come from, I've been programming and making games my whole life. But professionally, I come from an electrical and software engineering background. And it's just been really great to be fully immersed in the software crypto space now.
Hell yeah. Cool. Yeah. So I'm Charles. And I basically was, I think I got into crypto by way of just being really interested in economics and philosophy and was kind of just like agitating a lot at the school I was at in college for people to, you know, entertain Austrian economics, just like, hey, like, will professors teach you it? Like, I was curious about it, you know, kind of forced one professor to give me a one-on-one tutorial in it for a period, which was great. And was sort of like really philosophically inclined towards this and really easy to persuade when I finally heard about it, which is at my like one and only real job where I was like working at a consulting firm for like a year. My mentor, who personally went on to be my mentor, bought me a Bitcoin for like $400. And then as soon as it was in like a self-custody wallet and I could kind of feel it and it was very visceral, I was like, okay, let's do it. So I quit that, moved to Texas, unsuccessfully helped someone start a Bitcoin mine, and then went on to work at a DeFi protocol called Reserve, helped them launch their RSR token, and then got way more interested in all the social behavior around tokens than the protocols themselves. And when NFTs started coming up, Zach and I were talking about gaming. We were like, there needs to be this open UGC platform where all this different IP can come together and have a shared stage and a shared place to create content and socialize. And as soon as we said the words island, I think we were like, okay, it's real. We're going to do it. And then we started spamming island emojis, and that was the most important part. That was huge.
It's funny. I don't even remember when we started talking about islands. It just kind of happened naturally from the discussion. When we were conceiving of this originally, it took a few different forms. And then we kind of ended up on this like, well, you know, does this like model that we're seeing of metaverses that are emerging, does it really make sense? Or you know, should we kind of look at this tried and true approach of like social media platforms where like you can go like make an account and then we just give you like your own space and your own like page, except in our world, that's a 3D space. And I guess the island kind of emerged naturally from that.
Yeah, you know, often the way I personally describe this concept of the metaverse is just the multiplayer internet, right? This immersive multiplayer internet. And you guys are obviously pushing towards that vision. And Charles, I've heard you specifically describe Nifty Island as sort of the YouTube for the metaverse, right? That's like a top line macro level vision that you have. So maybe using that as a launch pad, as a jumping off point, can you describe that a little bit and then start to move the conversation towards, you know, your big vision for Nifty Island?
Yeah, sure. So I think of it like there are two big bets we're making. And one of those bets is about Web3 and one of those bets is about the future of games. And the two feed into each other. So on the Web3 side, I think what Zach and I are most excited about when it comes to NFTs, in part, is that they're like these costly social signals where the internet's really noisy, no one knows what anyone really cares about. And then NFTs are this thing that are provably scarce. And when someone owns like an NFT and it's worth the price of a laptop or a small car, you're like, oh, this person's really excited about this. Like, and out of that comes new forms of groups, social groups on the internet that want to hang out and build stuff together and do stuff. Bored Apes holders behave very differently than almost anything else on the internet. And so our bet is that that phenomena will continue to extend and that they need that we need platforms that support it and create content and coordination around those groups. And then the gaming bet is just that, like, we're kind of done with these titles that are like Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, like it's a little played out. And at this point, I think people are the most exciting games are ones where you users create the content. So like YouTube of games is something I say a lot, which has become basically a meme in our, you know, between Zach and I at least. And basically users will be surprised and delighted by the content they find. And by assigning property rights in the form of NFTs to the content that's produced, that content can become way cooler. People are incentivized to create awesome stuff, 3D assets, games, avatars, etc. And so we're trying to be a catalyst for that future. Like, you know, Roblox is like a good start, but there's a big, big frontier of how far that trend can go. And we want to fly into it as fast as possible, basically.
Yeah. And what we've seen so far, you know, the game's in alpha right now, but, you know, it's been proven that people are just itching to create content and they need, they're looking for places to do it. And even with, so our community interactions have been, you know, kind of incentivizing people with rewards to create stuff. And what we've seen is people who have never like 3D modeled before are picking up Blender and using it. We've been having workshops and people are learning new skills to do this thing they've never done before because they're just like just full of this raw talent that they've never really had an outlet for, which we think NFTs as like an artistic tech really enables. It's direct to consumer art. And, you know, before that kind of direct to consumer path existed, people would have to go get sponsored or get promoted by someone who has the capital to do so. So it's really opening up new ways for these people to create and new incentives to do so. And it's just revealing how much raw talent is underneath.
Yeah. I just quick add on there. Like it's like, I sometimes think about it, like who's going to be like the PewDiePie of the metaverse and like, what does that person look like? And it is what Zach's saying, where it's like people can use Blender. They can do some light Unity work. They can play games with people and entertain them. Like it's a kind of new skill set that I think that will define the next wave of creator. Like, and it'll be, there'll be someone like PewDiePie, but you know them for this wacky avatar and you like playing their games and you like their 3D assets and you like spending time on their island, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think we've seen this in every aspect of culture, both IRL and digitally, right? This idea that whenever you unleash the inner creator of your communities, you just create this consistent flywheel of loyalty, you know, word of mouth, bringing people onto the platform. One thing that I noticed when I logged into Nifty Island for the first time was just how focused you guys are on the building within these worlds, right? To make it easy for a person like me who's non-technical and you know, I'm not a creator in the sense that I don't understand these tools, right? I can't use Blender. I'm not proficient in that. Can you talk about how important it is, sort of the design of Nifty Island to allow non-technical folks like myself to create as opposed to just consume?
Yeah, it's something that we do put a lot of thought into, kind of these like tiered levels of advancement in using the tools. And there's a lot that you can do with just a very basic understanding. And we've kind of broken out like the terraforming tools to be, you know, they have a toolbar kind of like you'd see in Microsoft Paint where you just like select, all right, here's my brush. Here's my, like my tool. Am I like adding or subtracting or flattening land? And then like, it's as far as placement of objects, we allow you to just like kind of drag and drop things into your world. And, We've seen a lot, you know, I've learned a lot from playing other games that have this kind of stuff. And sometimes it's really frustrating trying to do what you want to do. And it's just so important that someone entry level can come into the game and just start customizing their island any way they want, even if they're not necessarily a creative. Maybe they're there for some other kind of promotional purpose, and they want to just like set up their island in a basic sense. So yeah, we see it as really important. And what we're going to do, like, we kind of have like the basic system out now, and there's just going to be like levels of advancement, more and more you can do as you become more of an advanced user if you want to, and really like customize how things look and build really cool, like complex structures and contraptions and that kind of stuff. So yeah, just trying to accommodate everyone, and our philosophy is the best way to do that is start from the most basic and work down.
And one, again, like with the YouTube analogy, like something that you see on YouTube that's cool is like some people make crazy high fidelity videos that are like really impressive. And then some people have channels where all they're really doing is remixing bits and pieces from other people's content and making stuff that's genuinely really fun, but a lot easier to make. And that's sort of how the like creator tools work, that they're barbelled between what Zach's describing, where it's like you can hop in, you can know nothing about Blender or anything, and you can place objects and manipulate them in a pretty sophisticated way. And then if you really know what you're doing, you can be the one who creates those objects. And then there's an interplay between people who create objects and really know what they're doing to like the remixers, you know, where they're like, I bought a bunch of stuff from the store, I have all these items, and I'm going to position them in a very surprising and interesting way. And that interplay, I think, just like on YouTube, is really fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good time.
So, I mean, we see it. There's definitely importance in having both of these groups, right? They work together. Having the people who aren't necessarily creative, they're there to, you know, help bolster the marketplace and incentivize the creatives to be on the platform as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like in these early days of Web3 and the metaverse, like that's a friction. I can't think of the right word, but I'll use the word friction, I guess, between those who will become professional metaverse people, right? The play to earn crowd, those who will be designing experiences within the metaverse and monetizing it, like actually professionally living in a metaverse, and then those who are consuming or casually inviting people into their spaces that they're creating, maybe a more immersive version of like a social media platform, right? So I feel like that's a good jumping off point now to kind of talk about the accessibility of the platform for like the everyman, right? You guys are not going with a scarce land model. And I feel like that probably, and I'll let you guys tell the story better than I could tell the story, but that seems to align with your idea that, you know, you want to give everyone a place to create. So maybe starting with first principles, if you guys want to jump in and talk about how that decision was made and how you see that decision playing out over time.
Yeah. So I'll say for us, the decision is, it's more like what's the default? And the default for us is like, why would land be scarce in the first place? And I know it's been like, that's how it's been in the metaverse so far, but the reason we expect that's happened is, you know, like Decentraland came out with their scarce land model, like someone does it. And then, you know, as we all know, this space is just very derivative. So one person does it, one person makes a tweak and does the same thing. And then one person makes a tweak and it just kind of snowballed from there is the way we see it. But we don't really, you know, if you were designing something to be a fun game and looking at it from that perspective and not necessarily from the, you know, the crypto side, then it seems like the scarce land model prevents a lot of things. And we have a lot of things to say about it, I guess. Yeah, Charlie, I'll let you start on that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, this is like, at the moment, the topic, and it's honestly one that I really hope the space just moves past, because there's just no reason for the path that things have gone down, really. And so the question really is, like, when you designing the game, every single thing should optimize for some end user value. Like, why are you doing this? What end user value does it support? And scarce land is optimized for fundraising, for sure. Like, that is what it has done effectively, and that's why it has proliferated. But it's actually an incredibly costly form of fundraising, because what you're taking on is you're taking in money, but your liability is an incredible amount of game design debt, where suddenly you're like, we need to have a grid map and we need the land to be scarce, and to build stuff, you need to buy it. And if you break that contract, then you're essentially rugging your entire investor base, right? And I believe some will at some point, because it just, but because the debt that you're incurring is, it's very hard to create content. And so for us, we're optimizing for user generated content and free to play fun. And scarce land really has no place in that picture. And the way to think about it too, is that it's like, imagine you're on like a spectrum of -100 to 100, and you know, right in the middle, or like, and you know, basically right in the middle is something like YouTube. You can make user generated content, but the incentives to do so aren't that good. I see the scarce land model as like -100. Like, you are basically saying the cost to create content is like $10,000, which is insane. So, and then we're trying to go to 100, where it's like, it's free to make the content and you make a bunch of money making it, right? And there's all this incentive and value in doing so. So I really think if you're trying to understand the metaverse, probably one of the best things you can discard is the scarce land concept. Like, you just, honestly, you'll go so much further if you just literally set that aside and say, there's no point in discussing it. That's kind of how I am.
I have a few comments as well. Just like, number one, like the type of person it attracts, if you're selling scarce land, you know, there's maybe some people who have a lot of money and they're creatives and they're going to buy land and build on it. I would argue probably most of them are investors, which is great. You know, people should be investing in crypto. A lot of people have done really well in land sales. But the problem with that is all these people who are just doing it for financial gain are not necessarily building on these plots. And what you end up with is kind of like this wasteland of land that people are holding and not building of and you, on. And you have these neighborhoods of some people are building on their plots, and then right next to it, there's something that's never been touched. And it's just kind of this like, it's kind of barren, and you have to walk a lot to find the next interesting thing. And the other thing that it does is, you know, it makes everyone who doesn't own land in the in these metaverses, it turns them into a tourist, and you don't really own any stake in this thing, and you don't really have too much to do. You're just kind of looking at everyone's stuff, and that could be good to an extent. But I mean, is it enough to keep people coming back? Like, how much if you can't do anything besides look at some things people have made, you know, how much draw do you have to come back and play the game? It's like going to a museum, which I enjoy, but how often are you going to do that? I can't go to a museum every day. I'll go once a year, you know, when my girlfriend comes.
Exactly. This is such a deep and such an interesting conversation. We could devote hours to it. And I actually foresee maybe someday having a Port Zero podcast where we have representatives of both sides of the aisle talk about this. I feel like that would be a lot of fun. And you know, in thinking about this interoperable, interconnected metaverse made up of constellations of virtual worlds and everything that's made up there, you know, I think one of the most interesting parts about this is that it's such early days that we are literally shaping the future together, and design decisions that have been made, that are being made, and that will be made will kind of come together and give us this great future that we're all pacing towards. So speaking on this point of early days, I'm going to take a hard pivot and go towards the early days of the internet. You know, I like to hear the influences of the builders, right? Like, where did you get your design cues from? Like, where did your personal aesthetic come from? What sort of games were you playing that really influenced the way you think about the metaverse today? So just open-ended question, like, what are your influences? What are your memories of early Web 1, Web 2? What games did you grow up playing? Ooh, all that, yeah. Just take it whatever direction you want.
Sure, who's starting here? I'll go.
You go.
Who's starting?
This will be fun.
Yeah, you asked us the gamer question. So, for me, I would say definitely number one is Minecraft, and that's pretty apparent when you see the game. It's kind of like an open building and terraforming sim, right? And Minecraft is just so cool for me in the sense that you can really just go in with a bunch of people and create something that's like yours. And the really cool thing about doing it in this way, where it's kind of built like a social platform, is you can share it with everyone. So, and there's, you know, there's ways to do that in Minecraft, but I usually play vanilla on custom worlds, but, so that's a big one for me. And then, like, you know, a bunch of us were playing Valheim, when we started working on this, and that was a big influence for like the build system. And yeah. And then I think I definitely have taken a lot of influence from social media sites, and we haven't really said this before, but like, a lot of us, you know, especially once like the pandemic started, we were all on Discord a lot, and kind of that vibe is something that we eventually want to translate into the game. So that kind of just like hanging with everyone, having like voice chat, text chat, like fun reactions and stuff like that you can do while you're in this kind of Minecraft world. I would say that's kind of it for me.
Nice. I'm definitely not the resident Minecraft player. I played when it came out a lot, but didn't stick with it. But for me, I think like the first thing I was really excited about on the internet was just all the ideas and stuff you could search about, where I'd just be like on Wikipedia and I'd probably be in like sixth grade or seventh grade. And I just type in like communism, you know, I'd be like, what is it? I'm like, what is it though? Like, and I would just be like, oh, so there's like, and at that point, like you're so naive and you're just like, okay, so people are organizing themselves in different ways and they have these strong opinions about how that should be done. And I was like really intrigued by this. And for me, I got really into strategy games because I'd be looking up all these different things, just Wikipedia surfing, like different blogs, you know, all this kind of stuff, and just looking at like obsessing over different games as they got released. And strategy games for me, I just absolutely adore. And so I'd play like a ton of Civ, Age of Mythology, all the Total War games, a bunch of more obscure 4X games. And I just love those games. Like they're so interesting. They teach you how to think. They teach you about risk and reward, long-term planning. Like I love those games. And then the other game I really like a lot is Super Smash Bros. Like that's probably my number one game of all time. I've played every iteration. I still play. And that one is just, it's so beautiful because it's this crossover episode of all this different IP that you love, and it interacts like really unexpectedly. And it's also just an amazing game. And like, you can literally learn to read people's minds by how they play Super Smash Bros. You know, you're like, oh, you would do that. You would be aggressive off the edge like that, you know? And that Super Smash is in a weird way a point of inspiration for this game for me, because it's the crossover. I love the crossover. It's great.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy though that like Super Smash Brothers in many ways for me, you know, is like the first instance where like this concept of the metaverse can click, meaning crossover, right? Like in the physical world, you know, I can take my Mario toy and my Star Fox toy and have them fight, right? That is something that I can do as a child or an adult and I can have that happen, right? And it wasn't until we saw like Super Smash Brothers, Marvel versus Capcom, games like that, where our imaginations were ignited in such a way to kind of like open up this concept of what does this sort of great amalgamation of IP within an open metaverse look like? Do you think about that when you're designing the game, or like how does that play into your mentality? I mean, Charles, you brought it up, right? So clearly you think about it to some extent, but let's go a little deeper on that.
Yeah, I'll jump in, and then Zach, you take it from here. I guess the thing that I look at it is like there's this immense amount of cool IP production that's occurred over like 20th century, 21st century, and it is really cool. Like we've reached a point where some of these corporations are so immense that they can do a whole content universe within their thing. It's like metaverse within one company, you know? It is cool. The thing that I feel though is that so much of that stuff has gotten like so like painfully stale, where it's just like, you're like, okay, here we go again, another movie like this. And the thing that really excites me about NFTs and the game we're building is it's the chance for like a bottom-up internet folklore where people make new IP, everyone owns it in common, and then there's no IP protection. Everybody just memes it and keeps building more and more assets. Like, I'm going to build an avatar. I'm going to build a house. I'm going to build this. I'm going to build a movie. And that is where I think the next wave of culture will come from. And I'm hopeful that our platform plays some small role in facilitating that. But yeah. Go ahead, Zach.
I guess what I have to say is just a little tangential to that. But the fact that, you know, people really love their NFTs, and it's kind of like looking from the outside and seeing, you know, you have a token on the blockchain that says I own this image. And that's like, you know, people looking in at NFTs, it's like, wow, that's so stupid. It's like, yeah, it is. But I think the stuff that we're building is going to make that really cool. And it's kind of hard to explain until you've tried it, like buying an NFT and, you know, I bought like a few like Meebits and it as an investment. And I was like, oh, great, I'll flip these and make some money. And then you just get really attached to them. You're like, damn, I really love my Meebits, and just like seeing them on your page. And then, so the, like taking that, and I think, you know, more and more people will get into this and realize it's actually pretty addictive. And then once these things have actual utility, like bringing all these different projects into the game world is going to be just super satisfying. And it's a little different, right, than like the Super Smash Bros. Thing where everyone can be Mario or whatever. Now you're a variant of Mario, kind of, that no one else has. So, in that analogy, anyway. So
yeah,
that's how I think about it.
You guys started incorporating utility already with the first batch of NFTs on your platform. These legendary palms, all the palms that you guys have. Okay, let's talk about utility a little bit, and I'll let you guys decide what direction you want to take it, either high level, like future state, or, you know, currently what you guys are optimizing for on Nifty Island. Utility, how does that play into Nifty Island?
Yeah, maybe, I feel like Zach probably, do you want me to go high level future stuff and then you can talk about what actually exists, or?
Sure.
All right, that just feels like my bias anyway, so let's do it. Yeah, I think like the future point we're trying to push towards is that it's like the most radically open to UGC game. Like I really often take the comparison of like Roblox is like cool, but we want to make Roblox look like the Soviet Union, right? Where it's like this actually this very closed economy where people don't have any guarantees over the stuff they produce. And if you make a like a hat in Roblox, there's infinite numbers of them. Who really cares? You can't resell it. As soon as you buy a hat in Roblox, you're basically incinerating $20. We're going to assign property rights over everything and make the game very open to UGC. From like a tech perspective, like being able to import custom 3D assets, make games, make avatars, make music, etc. So that for me is like the North Star is like, how can we do, we have to do two things at once, be radically open to UGC and assign property rights to it, and then allow users to earn a stake in the game, in-game value by contributing to it. And I think if you do those two things right, then you should have like the biggest game in the world. Like that would be my, you know, goal is like, that's where you want to push to. I think someone is going to do that and the feedback loop will be so intense that like it will be a game that's like kind of a little bit hard to recognize really from the early stages of it. And that's the North Star for me, social network game. Everyone's contributing to it. Many people have a piece in it. It's almost more like a movement than just a product. And yeah, that's some stuff. But I don't even think I answered your question. So you go ahead, Zach. I don't know. Utility.
Sure. I don't know if I have anything to add there. Utility for palms or utility for third-party NFTs or what are we talking about?
Just your thoughts on utility generally. It doesn't have to be specific to Nifty Island.
Utility. Yeah. Well, I think we're already seeing this like shift in utility, right? So people have put out, you know, profile pics and that kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, the utility there, I mean, there was basically none for a while, right? You could, you know, make it your Twitter profile and people had to trust that you actually own the NFT. And now Twitter's kind of catching on. So now there's a bit of utility at it. And now what are these projects doing? They're making avatars for their PFPs. And, you know, in a way to kind of continue providing value to their community. Why should we continue to hold this thing or else we're going to dump it? So yeah, they're making avatars and that's a little bit of more tangible utility, right? Where you can play as it in games. And I'm not so sure where we're going to go from there, honestly. It's kind of hard to think. One thing that we're thinking of, so that people are making avatars and we want to try to, you know, make those things kind of valuable. And one thing that we're looking at is building assets around these projects. So things like, say I own like a Deadfellas now in game, I unlock this Deadfellas house that I can put on my island, or I unlock like some, like a special like gravestone model or something like that. All these kind of things that can be associated with it and provide like custom value for holding. And then if you sell it, you lose all those things, but maybe it you know, increases the sale price and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Utility is something it's just constantly developing. And once one project thinks of a smart thing to do, like a smart direction to take, then everyone kind of copies and that's good for the holders for sure.
Yeah. It's a funny word. Cause it's like, I don't know if I've ever heard people say the word utility more than I have in crypto, but there's like so little of it often, you know, it's like,
right.
And it's kind of a funny thing. It's like utility and it's like, we're almost saying it because it's not there, and it will be there. It will happen. But like, there's a lot of shit that has no utility. Like, it's kind of crazy.
I think one can argue that a lot are saying it to get around the securities laws, maybe.
Okay, maybe so.
Yeah. Wonky regulatory humor there, but I do think maybe we're memeing it into existence, right? In a sense that I think we all know that it has to go beyond just collectibles, right? It has to go beyond hashes on the blockchain, right? We need to give utility to these NFTs for people to want to come back, to make them sticky, right? So maybe there we'll transition into the last question and just a general question about what makes you most excited about the space currently, like whether it's Nifty Island related or not, like what are you seeing in the space that, you know, is making you super excited for tomorrow? Because obviously this stuff moves so fast, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah. Well, I already touched on it, but I think, you know, a lot of these profile pick projects moving into avatars is a really huge step, and it's really going to kind of bring the space to life, I think, in a way that's tangible to people looking in, who aren't involved in NFTs now. Charlie, feel free to jump in. I'm still brainstorming.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. I'd say for me, it's like there's an answer that's like inside the space looking out and then outside the space looking in. And the inside the space thing, like what's happening, what's changing. For me, it's like NFTs are the beachhead into like a consumer facing world where people actually want to associate with the blockchain in some way, whether they know it or not. And I think what you're going to see is like more and more cool, compelling, real NFT brands. There's a few good ones. There's a lot of nonsense, but there's a few really good ones. And those groups are basically forming tight associations. And then I think I'm really excited to see DAO tooling start to allow those people to actually do stuff together and coordinate. And then the third layer of that is, what are they going to do together? I think it's game stuff, because the real world is a lot slower than the digital one. And games are going to be the first venue where all of these groups are like, oh, let's work together and do something cool. And when that starts happening, it's going to get really insane. And then outside looking in for me, I basically think we're almost there where people are going to really start doing like mass consumer apps that aren't Coinbase or FTX. And I would put it, I like saying this one because it's fun. It's like by like somewhere like mid 2023, I think there will be like one or two, you know, maybe more applications that are like starting to get there where it's sort of like, oh shit, like people are doing it. Right now we have OpenSea, Coinbase, FTX, it's all trading. There'll be one or two things where people, like very large audiences, start to glob on to say, ooh, there's utility here. There's something besides trading assets. And I really think by like mid 2023, hopefully, I think we'll be there. I think we'll get it.
Yeah. I think go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I love a good, strong bet. I mean, you even put a timeline down, really, really committing to that.
I'm down, dude. I'm down. You can hose me for it later.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, I think this year, 2022, things are going to start to go exponential in terms of consumer adoption, because we're seeing people make products that are more of a consumer friendly interface. Like people, for example, like, you know, if you've shown your mom how to use MetaMask, it's not a pleasant experience, but I think we're coming out with apps that allow you to kind of push all that stuff down behind the scenes and really and allow people to, you know, do things in a way that they're familiar with. And that's going to just really drive people to get into the space. And once they see, you know, some of these projects like ours and some other ones out there, like doing things that are kind of more relatable to them, like, oh, this is like Minecraft, but there's NFTs, and oh, you don't have to use NFTs. I think that's going to drive a lot of people into the space. And in fact, we're already seeing that. I was surprised to learn like a lot of our people in our community, some of the most active ones, don't even have NFTs. And I thought everyone did. It's crazy. And so they're playing the game for the fun of it, which is, is that new in a crypto game? Maybe. So yeah, I think it's starting.
I love totally. That we're ending here that you brought up fun, really just ending it with such a strong three letters, right? Fun. It's all about fun, right? We're making games. These games need to be fun. And these games will be fun. And Nifty Island is a whole bunch of fun. You guys are fun. You know, Charlie.
You're fun.
Zach, thank you. Charlie, Zach, it was a fun time having you guys on Port Zero. I thank you very much. So with that, I'll close it out here. To the audience, thank you for listening. You can catch a new episode of Port Zero every other Friday. You can also catch the Polygon Studios crew delivering a weekly video briefing on the Polygon Studios YouTube, and that's every Wednesday. So be sure to follow us at Polygon Studios on Twitter and join our Discord and our social media. So thank you, everyone. Charlie, Zach, thanks, guys.
Great to meet you, Brian. Thanks a lot.
You can catch a new episode of Port Zero every other Friday, and you can also catch the Polygon Studios crew delivering a weekly video briefing on the Polygon Studios YouTube. That's every Wednesday. Be sure to follow Polygon Studios at Polygon Studios on Twitter and all other social media, Discord included. So, you know, don't be afraid to join our beautiful burgeoning community. And this is Brian Trunzo again signing off. Thank you for listening to Port Zero.